found this on Ganarum. Ganamir Ni.
What is it?
Well, it's
sick performance.
Synthaholics, guys. It's your host, David Duncan. And with me, I've got the Geek Tank.
Yes. Yep. We couldn't wait. I tried to jump right in
and start talking before you were done. This is Guy.
Guy. This is Troy.
Troy, yes. So Guy, you've heard many, many times before on the show. He's basically our third co-host. So Troy is a voice you haven't heard yet. So welcome. Welcome, both of you.
Oh, I'm so excited to be here. I'm nowhere, anywhere in the same ballpark as Guy in what you guys talk about on your podcast usually, because Guy's the guy I go to when I have, what color was Deanna Troi's button on her left shirt? And he knows this off the top of his head.
He knows a lot of stuff. Like, he basically ran our whole Shuttlecraft for Arthur episode. I was just like nodding and agreeing with him because he had a wealth of knowledge on that.
I'm just old, is what it boils down to.
Will Wheaton's age.
I have gray hair. I'm old.
But so. Yeah, thanks for having me on the show. I've been looking forward to it ever since Guy, he talks about the show highly.
Yeah, I like the show. Oh, this is a great show.
Thank you so much. And you guys are great, too. I listened to your new episode today about what is great or what makes great about science fiction, fantasy, and other genres. It was a lot of fun.
Well, so what are we talking about today?
We're going to do a Rogue One discussion. This is our non-Star Trek topic of the month. So Aaron's not here today, he wasn't able to make it. But if you want to hear Aaron's thoughts on Rogue One, you can go to the Nerdynomicon, their podcast. You can listen to Four Rogues on Rogue One, where you'll actually hear me and Aaron talk about Rogue One, our immediate reactions, because we watched the movie and then literally sat down and recorded.
We were not nearly on ball enough to do that. I don't even think we saw it together.
We didn't. No, we didn't.
Well, with Rogue One, before we kind of dive into that, why don't we kind of like each give a rating of how we rate the Star Wars movies total, so we can kind of just have like a preview of what we think of the movie just from how you rank them.
That's a good idea.
I don't know. I think 1, 2, and 3 are pretty rank, personally, of all of them. But I don't think that they're as rank as you think they're rank.
Yeah, you actually would willingly sit down and watch them again without there being the Chinese subtitle.
The Chinese subtitle is the only way to watch that movie. Oh, my goodness.
I agree.
It is beautiful.
You guys will willfully watch
Chinese. I will watch it because it's hilarious.
It's funny, and they drop in F-bombs. It doesn't even make any sense.
Yeah, and the language is, and I mean, other than the F-bombs, the language is completely erratic. It's like, doesn't even make any sense.
The Jedi start off as the Parliament, and then they turn into the Presbyterian Church halfway through the movie.
Nice. I've not fully watched it all, but I completely intend to.
I've watched about an hour of it. It is absolutely amazing. But my list from best to worst is probably Return of the Jedi, Empire Strikes Back, A New Hope, and Episode 7 are tied because they're essentially the same movie with just different characters. And then Rogue One, then Episode 3, Episode 1, then Episode 2 is probably the worst.
Oh, wow, you hate 2 more than 1.
Two is awful because of the love story romance with the wooden acting and sand. It's rough, and it's coarse, and it just gets everywhere.
I don't care what you've been brainwashed by 80s love movies. Stalking someone and being creepy is not a love romance.
Well, I just love how he touches her back awkwardly. And we talked about this on our episode 2 show we did in November. But I actually found a picture of George Lucas standing behind them in this scene. And I just imagined George Lucas touching her back. Like, this is how you do it, Hayden. Just touch her back like this. Be as creepy as you possibly can. Girls love this.
Girls love it when you're creepy.
Well, you can go next if you like.
Yeah, I guess I would put Episode 4, Episode 7, and Rogue One really close to the top. I'm sorry, Episode 5, Empire Strikes Back. So Empire Strikes Back, Rogue One, and The Force Awakens are really, really close to the top. So I don't know which one's at the top. Probably Rogue One. And the reason is because it has a factor that I have always loved in shows that I never see, which is that it's not necessarily... Are we going to be doing spoilers in this, by the way? Is this one of those...
this is most definitely spoilerish.
Yeah, this is going to be spoilerish.
It's also a month after the movie's come out, so if you haven't seen it, you're not going to see it. So why have you waited this long to see this movie?
DVD, pour gasoline on it, set fire to it. You're not going to watch it.
Don't watch it, yeah. And burn your...
But I like it when the heroes don't win. Because then when the next movie comes out, there's much more peril.
Well, in a way, they did win.
Well, no, but I mean, they didn't live.
Right. It wasn't a 100% win.
No, it wasn't. It was the best that they could get out of it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, to me, that was, like, really gutsy. I thought that was gutsy for Disney. I thought that was gutsy for Lucasfilm. I thought that was pretty gutsy. And you knew it. You knew, because we never saw Jyn Erso in the plans for you know, destroying the Death Star later on. And she's such an effective fighter that it would be stupid to not have her standing next to Mon Mothma there when they're talking about going to attack the Death Star.
We never saw Mon Mothma till Return of the Jedi, though.
That's true.
In the original trilogy.
Whoever the bearded guy was.
Although, if Lucas had control, you know he would go back and CGI Jyn in all three of those movies. With
right,
her
just
next
to have
her
in there.
Probably.
Buy it.
Yep.
But why didn't they have Hera in that sequence when they're standing around the hologram circle thing?
Yeah.
I mean, they had her ship in there, and they had Chopper, if you blink, you miss it. But like, they should have had her standing there. I would have loved to see a live-action version of Hera.
She had blue milk and was in the restroom at the time of that.
Oh, come on. There was like three different scenes, three different times they were standing around that thing. It wasn't just like one scene.
She didn't learn her lesson the first time or the second time. She kept drinking out of the same spoiled blue milk and gave her stomach cramps.
Oh, that's the name of this podcast.
Hera's way smarter than that.
Right there. I'm just going to put that out. That's the title of the Geek Tank version of this is Spoiled Blue Milk right there.
All right.
It's done.
So I would rank them very similar to Guy. The thing is, when I was watching Rogue One, and this happened to me in another movie, Cloud Atlas, halfway through I'm like, why am I loving this movie so much? Is this movie really this good, or is this just really good popcorn? I'm with really good friends, and I've had a really good day, and it's all affecting this way. So I kind of want to see it a second time before I say it's better than Episode One, or better than Empire Strikes Back, because right now Empire Strikes Back is my favorite. Rogue One is a contender with that.
Yeah.
I'd have to say Return of the Jedi next, because I actually like that better than Force Awakens. And then I like A New Hope better than Force Awakens. Then Force Awakens falls before that.
And you like Force Awakens better than Force Awakens?
I like Force Awakens better than Force Awakens.
Just making sure.
The director's cut.
Right.
And then there is no Episode 1, 2, or 3 movie, as far as I'm concerned. It's almost like what I really wanted to have happen for Force Awakens was we have a flashback of Han Solo with young Kylo Ren at like age 6 or something. And Episodes 1, 2, and 3 was nothing but Harrison Ford telling his kid the story of what had happened. And he was just embellishing it and watering it down and creating all this weird crap like Jar Jar.
Or maybe 1, 2, and 3.
But Jar Jar is really a dark Sith Lord.
For going bad.
Oh.
You see, after he heard the whole story from Han Solo, this is his justification.
For turning bad.
Binks, I wouldn't be sitting here with my flamey sword cutting things apart madly. Yeah. Now we've solved it. Solved.
So
you heard it here on Synthaholics Geek Tank.
Right. And so, I'm gonna
so you guys both loved Rogue One way more than I did, so I'm gonna be the negative nanny on this one.
No, and you know what? I've got friends who just absolutely hated Rogue One to the point of putting it worse than Episode One. I've got one friend who says it was worse than Episode One.
Wow, I mean, I it's definitely better than the prequels. I mean, it is a solid movie. The ending is just, it just falls apart.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
I love the ending. Well, the ending's worth
Like the ending, as in like the last 30 minutes of the movie.
Right. You mean the whole fighting and the what's its and everything?
Well, there were some things that, when you stop and think about it, are just, you wonder, did they not have a script writing meeting where they sit down and said, does this seem logical? For instance, how many ion blasts does it take to cause a Star Destroyer to shut down?
Turn off.
Right.
If you played X-Wing or TIE Fighter, it takes a lot.
Yeah.
Like hundreds.
So
maybe that's because they've evolved. You know, in X-Wing, X versus TIE, it was one of those, well, these are the post-Rogue One. It's going to take forever to get through
but
them.
Technology,
they're like adapted.
Technology never changes in Star Wars. And to me, like people, like some people tout that Star Wars has got way better technology than Star Trek. And I think this movie proves it even more wrong. That like you can't send a communication beyond a shield. In Star Trek, you can send, Captain Kirk can send a message through his shields, through the Romulan shields, to the Romulan ship.
You've actually had someone tell you Star Wars has better technology than Star Trek?
Oh, some people are like, oh, everything in Star Wars is better than Star Trek. I'm like, no.
I'm just talking very specific close. Technology. Because that makes no sense to me at all. Yeah. Because you can teleport. So, and this goes back to where Guy lumps Star Wars as a fantasy thing, because you do have this kind of retro, not steampunk or...
No, but it's like
steampunk,
that.
It's it's almost like that. It's like they had really good technology and then they lost something along the way.
Yeah.
But it's really because it was created in the 80s, so they were just speculating off of what they had. And they wanted to be different than Star Trek, which they I can appreciate.
Well, and they really wanted swords.
Yeah.
But they didn't want to do
really wanted swords.
Ridiculous.
Laser swords.
Yeah, so we got
Mr.
Laser
Lucas
swords.
Will call them laser swords.
Yeah. So that's where I rank on my I would put almost anything that is professionally made fan wise and otherwise, like the animated Star Wars shows, way above the episode 1 through 3 shows. So yeah, I there's so many things wrong about it. I could do like 30 podcasts on just everything I hate about it.
Everything I hate about the prequels. That'd be a long series.
I ran a role playing game based off of my hate for it. I ran a how it should have been game,
and he did.
That's awesome. So, what do you guys think were the? Let's start with the low points with Rogue One. What do you guys think were the low points?
You got to edit that part out. You know that.
No, that'd be where we'd go. Well, let's go to a break, and we'll be back right after this.
I've already said, you know, the 7-8 shots to take out a Star Destroyer was a little rushed, and. They did it to set up the cool hammerhead ship pushing scene.
The hammerhead ship was pretty cool. I'm not sure why it didn't just cut all the way through the Star Destroyer, since they're like basically made of paper. Because when the other Star Destroyer ran into the other one, that just like cut through it like, you know, bread and butter.
Yeah, they don't have crumple zones, apparently.
The Sherman's didn't.
No. But no, that's crinkle zones. That's get
Christmas
there,
zones.
It's almost like in the animated movie Inside Out. They had a joke they really wanted to put in, but nobody thought that joke totally ruins the plot. They're trying to get these memory orbs back to the headspace, and this is all inside of a kid's head. And they have a really long way to go. They run into some workers who find this bubblegum commercial song, and they send it up to where to go to mess with them. And I'm like, why don't you just use the same tube system to send these really important memories back up? And nobody thinks of it. It's just they had a joke. They wanted the joke. They didn't think about the plot hole. In Rogue One, they had a really cool scene of how they're going to crash the Star Destroyer. And like, well, we need to shut it down. Well, let's shoot it a couple of times with an ion blaster, which if that worked, all of those Star Destroyers should have just been shot with ion blasters, and then they win.
Right.
Well, I mean, they did that in Empire, too, where I think it was only 2 or 3 shots that took out a Star Destroyer with the ion cannon.
Kamikaze is a kamikaze ship into the
cockpit. It was an A-Wing.
A-Wing, which I love A-Wings.
There's a beautiful fan comic out there called Green One, and it's the story of that pilot in the A-Wing. And it's like 9 pages. And there's no dialogue in it, and I can't remember the artist's name, and it makes me so sad because it is a beautiful, beautiful example of beautiful comic work.
You just have to remember to look it up and put it in at the end.
Yeah, I'll look it up.
I'm sorry, I'm being really like evil here, and I'm imagining if I had done this, it would have been 9 pages of this guy having just the crappiest day ever, of like his wife leaving. It's going wrong.
The truck won't start. The dog leaves.
He got fired from
his
other
job.
It's
totally a country music song.
Right. And so then when he gets in that situation, he's like, screw it. I'm going to crash my ship.
I'm done, man. I'm done.
That was something. Occasionally the pacing in Rogue One felt like,
it was a little rough.
Because they were trying to tell multiple stories.
Especially at the beginning. Like, to me, like, it just was so, like, the movie starts so abruptly without the opening crawl. And then, like, they had, like, the 10 different transitions at the beginning of the movie within 10 minutes. And it was like, why are we jumping all over the place?
Having trouble setting it up.
They had a lot of exposition that they had to get in that they missed out on by having.
But did they need all the exposition? I don't know if they really did.
It was beautiful to look at. I was visually was really impressed, but yeah, storyline wise,
the movie was visually stunning without a doubt.
Yeah, I don't think they had to have that there. That all could have came out later with Jen saying they took my dad when I was a kid, and he was a weapons designer, and they could have found
that would have worked better, I think.
Yeah, but that's against the show it, don't tell it.
But then they also always showed the planet, the name of the planet, and where they were going on the planet, except for the most important time they ever showed it.
Yeah.
And like, if you're gonna make a movie, be consistent. Like, people were like, is it Mustafar? Isn't it Mustafar? Some people said it wasn't, some people said it was. I mean, I think now it's been confirmed it was. But I'm like, why'd you not label that? It doesn't make any sense.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And the worst part is that later on we're like, it's Mustafar. Okay, well,
it turns out.
Why didn't you say that to begin with?
Yeah, I mean, be consistent in your filmmaking.
Yeah, but I could see that. I can see that.
I originally the crawl was kind of weird to not have, but because they also used a different composer than John Williams, I almost felt like I knew you were going to say it, so that's why I let you say it. And also, I couldn't remember it, but I'm pretending I remembered it.
He also did Kelvin Timeline Star Trek.
He's done a lot of cool stuff.
Yeah, he's pretty darn good.
But they did. They chose a different composer. They didn't use the craw. They dropped a couple of your standard, what you expect in Star Wars moves. And I think that they're trying to just set it up as a, we're in the Star Wars universe, but we aren't part of
the main story.
Skywalker storyline.
Right.
But I don't know. I am not in the head of the director, so I don't know if that's what his intent was. Or
a director head?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think my problem with it, if there was any major problem that I could see in it, which, again, I kind of feel like I need to go back and see it again to kind of get a better feel. But my biggest problem is the same thing as with just about every Star Wars movie, and that is there's all of these different things. And they've got AT-ATs, but they're not AT-ATs. They're AT-ACTs. And they're not quite the same as AT-ATs. And though I could see them being a generation before, it felt very much like episode 4 and 5 were only like 6 months apart. So it's kind of like saying that everybody in the Empire goes out and buys a 2017 VW and then promptly has to get the 2018 VW real quickly and throw those 2017s out because we're never going to use them again. You know, it's like really, they should have just been AT-ATs, just normal Joe Blow AT-ATs, just cranking along. And that would have been a lot cooler.
Well, the obvious reason would be money to make different toys.
And like the U. Okay. The U-Wing is great, but it makes me do Dallas jokes all the time. So who shot the U-Wing, you know? And it's like, I can't help myself, but I like it. It's a cool ship, but again, we've got another. I mean, they're going to run out of letters in the alphabet here.
I wonder if there's an IP issue.
No, because they had X-Wings.
Well, they're X-Wings, but they altered them, so I wonder if
they weren't altered. They were exactly the same.
I thought there was a change in them.
No, the X-Wings in Force Awakens were altered, but the ones in Rogue One were the same as they were in A New Hope.
Yeah, the Force Awakens X-Wings were
engines on those.
Yeah, the Force Awakens engines are more like the original Ralph McQuarrie designs.
That's what I'm getting.
Z95 Headhunter.
Yeah. Yes.
For the EU, also, for the old Expanded Universe ships.
Designs of the X-Wings, he had the intake manifolds being split like they are. So that's a nod to McQuarrie, because McQuarrie passed away just before they started working on Episode 7. And he was the original production illustrator for Star Wars 4, 5, and 6. And in fact, Doug Chang is the illustrator for 1, 2, and 3, 7, and Rogue One. So in a way, I kind of feel like, well, they have to give Doug Chang something to do. He's got to design something new. And you want him to design something he'll be remembered for, not 1, 2, and 3. So I kind of understand a little bit here with Rogue One, especially since really clearly the X-Wings were a nod to Ralph McQuarrie, so you can't really say that Doug Chang did the artwork on that. I don't know.
So to summarize, the past 10 minutes is Guy does not like that they aren't using the exact same ships from New Hope.
We had Y-Wings, we had X-Wings, and then we had a U-Wing.
Let's bring back what we're familiar with.
And the U-Wing was in the shower, and it's all remembering all of it, and it really was all just a dream.
I wonder how much of that the directors and the creative people actually have any control over or say over, since the money really controls what happens in the end.
I don't know.
Because it could have been Abrams was like, I want to use these old ships. And then he gets talked out of it really fast because they have to make new toys.
Right.
Which really they could make
Abrams
the old toys.
Abrams didn't do Rogue One though.
Oh,
but it's also
right.
been 30 years. Let's hope there's been some kind of changes in the technology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm okay with a small amount of changes. I mean, obviously the Y-Wing is pathetic compared to, say, a B-Wing.
B-Wing's my favorite.
Yeah, B-Wing's
beautiful. Since you're so much into ships. Now, I recently watched... look, I'm bringing Star Trek into the talk. I recently watched the evolution and history of the Enterprise-C.
Right, the Ambassador class.
Because I'm being commissioned to paint a little miniature of it, and I wanted to see what it looked like, and I came across this great video of the evolution of it.
Yeah.
And it's really cool how the designers of the ships in Star Trek make logical changes in their ships as they come about. From your perspective, do you think the changes they've portrayed in the chronology of ships in Star Wars made any kind of sense?
Yeah, and that's a good question. Because I don't know if I do, because I do feel like it's very much there's a chronology in Star Trek that's clear.
Yeah.
You know, you can see things, and by just eyeballing it, both David and I can eyeball and go, oh, that's original series era. Oh, that's movie era. Oh, that's next gen era. And we can easily kind of put it into those different eras because of the logic
of
the design.
It makes sense, yeah.
Right?
With Star Wars, there's not enough change. I mean, the X-Wings, other than the engine intake, X-Wing still pretty much looks like an X-Wing. I mean, it might be a little bit sleeker here and there, but they're not like huge, stark changes. I mean the one way you can tell like Naboo ships is they're just shiny. If it blinds you when you shine a light into it, it's a Naboo ship. If it's rough and got lots of like little things sticking out of it, it's an Empire ship. If it's rusty, it's a Rebel ship, and it's about
it. They were drastically different, in my opinion. And
everything was drastic.
A lot
different.
Of stuff made no sense, other than the jump pod addition to the ship.
Right. But, and you did see an evolution there to some degree. The Jedi Starfighter, which was in Episode 3, was clearly a precursor to a TIE fighter.
Yeah.
I mean,
they kept the cockpit.
They kept the cockpit and relative design. But it also kind of looked like a B-Wing. So it kind of looked like it could have spawned both of them.
But I don't really think technology changes. I mean, the stuff in them pretty much stays the same. Like, Star Wars doesn't really change all that much. I mean, things look different, but it seems like the technology behind them is always more or less the same.
Which,
because if you look at the Old Republic video game, like the online one, I mean, they've still got lights like thousands of years before. They've got lightsabers. They've got ships that jump to light speed. They've got ships that kind of look like Han Solo's, but not exactly. I mean, it's just different.
Snake Ritter. The Old Republic, what's old is new in the Republic.
So one complaint I've been hearing a lot about from the people who did not like Rogue One was they thought the dialogue was really poorly written and the delivery of the acting was kind of bad.
I did not assess that.
I did not see the acting being bad or the delivery being bad, although Cassian, his accent was a little thick. He was hard for me to understand a couple times. But my issues is I just didn't care about any of the characters. Especially if you're going to murder all of them by the end of the film, make me care about them a little bit. K2SO I loved, but I think it's also because I love Alan Tudyk.
Murder. Yeah, I'm just being obnoxious.
Stop interrupting.
I wasn't interrupting until you were like, what? Like, damn it.
Well, I mean, this is the thing with horror movies, too. You pretty much know almost everybody, if not everybody's going to die in a horror movie. Except Jason. The horror movie has to do a good job to get you to care about the people.
Yeah.
But I could see going into Rogue One not realizing because when you go into a horror movie, you know this. When you go into Rogue One, you don't know this.
Well, I mean, so. I pretty much figured it was a suicide mission, but I mean, but it's just, you know, if you're going to do a suicide, make me care about the characters before you kill them. And K2SO was the only one I was sad that we lost.
But that's because Alan Tudyk is such an incredible comedian.
Yes.
And they did. They just let him go. They just let him roll with it. And, I mean, he was saying that, like, half of his lines were improvised. He just made them up. You know, the director would say, yeah, you got to say something about, you know, the percentages or something. Yeah. And he's just like, you know, the percentages are nil. You know, we suck, right?
I like the, I won't die, I can survive in space.
Yeah.
I can survive. Yeah, he was absolutely brilliant. I loved K2SO, I loved the design. And he was CG'd so well, he looked like he was really, really, really there. I liked him a lot.
Yeah. Something with the accent. I read an interesting thing by the actor. He'd received a letter from someone's daughter who had taken her dad, who's in his 60s, to see the movie, and he has the exact same accent. And while they were watching it, he turned to his daughter and said, is this a main character? And she's like, yeah, this is a main character. And he's like, he talks like me. And she's like, yeah. And so for someone that connects with him, it was a huge impact for them to finally have someone representing them on screen.
But it wasn't K2SO you're talking
not
about.
K2SO.
Not K2SO. Not K2SO. Cassian.
Miguel. Oh, I've forgotten his name. Miguel. He was the guy who was Latino.
Correct.
Because he was speaking it with a Mexican accent.
Which Cassian. For some reason... Cassian, yeah. For some reason, my brain was making it sound French. And yeah. I think it's because it was...
I think he did drift between like a French and a Hispanic accent. It was really weird.
Sometimes French and Hispanic can blur, especially if you look at, you know, people in our area. America is made up of so many different people. I'm sure they're...
Nuh-uh.
Uh-huh. It's like Cajuns were all over the place, too, as far as accent goes. You can pick it up that it's Cajun, but it's clearly got a French feel to it. And it's clearly got a Caribbean feel to it.
Oh, yes.
Cajun, you know, the language is blurred.
Very different.
The accent is blurred because of the people in that area.
I really appreciated... with Force Awakens and Rogue One, that they're getting away from the really ridiculous accents from the episodes 1 through 3 movies with the aliens. If you're an alien, you have to have this accent.
Hey, Louis, yeah. I'm very nice. We got the money to pay for all this.
I don't even know what he's saying.
I'm offended for some reason.
For some reason, I'm offended.
I'm trying to think of other complaints I've heard about Rogue One. And for me... Because I was trying to analyze why are these people so mad at this, especially people that I would think would like it. That's what blew me away. I've got a friend who's a huge Star Wars fan, completely hates episodes 1 through 3 like me. And I fully expected someone like that to love it. And he's one of the people who hates it the most.
Mm-hmm. To me, I feel like there's just the can't. I just hate the ending because I feel like it contradicts so much at the beginning of A New Hope. Like Darth Vader's like, you know, he sees them flee. The transmission should have been beamed to the Tantine IV, not just handed off. And, you know, that way Leia could be like, oh yeah, we're on a diplomatic mission. But, like, she has no right to say that when Vader saw them leave. And I just, like, that just bothers me to death.
I've actually heard a different take on that, which was now Leia's even more of a badass because... She's standing up to Vader and bald-faced lying, and both Vader and she knows that she's bald-faced lying, but she's buying time.
I hated it, and they're like, oh, prep the escape pods. Why wouldn't the escape pods be prepped? You're in a ship that's in space. Shouldn't those always be, you know, on? You know, in case of an emergency, it's like, oh crap, we got shot. I guess we need to turn on the escape pods. Oh well, the power's off. We can't turn on the escape pods.
Maybe prepping means put people in them.
I don't know. Like, are they going to do another handoff scene, or are they just hand off the plans to someone in the escape pod? I don't know.
That's always been one of the things that torqued me off about episode 4 was, you know, the gunner there on the Imperial ship.
It takes them
like
five times as long to fire.
We're
it.
Here to look for a disc full of plans on the Death Star.
Actually,
look, it's an escape pod that has been ejected. There's nothing aboard it. Not the plans couldn't possibly be aboard that. No, we'll let it go.
Actually, your point right there, actually makes the end, you know, also reaffirms my belief that the ending is bad. Because, I mean, if they were just beamed over, they wouldn't know it was a desk. Like, Darth Vader knew it was a desk. Darth Vader should have been like, destroy anything because it's on a desk. You know what I mean? Because he saw the desk. But if it was just beamed...
Well, we knew it was on a disc because Leia puts the disc into R2.
Sure, but it could have been downloaded to a disc from, you know, from the ship that it was, since it, they could have downloaded it to the ship and then put it on a disc then.
That's what they did. They downloaded it to the Nebulan B.
Yeah.
The Nebulan B had it, and then they fired off the Tentative 4.
Sure, but the Tentative 4 should have been in a Duffer system. The plan should have been beamed to the Tentative 4 from the Nebulan B. And that way you still got Darth Vader.
Nebulan B thought it was going to get out of there.
I mean, you could have still... I mean, people hate that I don't like this. I've argued on Facebook forums, and I'm just like, look... Vader could have still had his awesome scene where he chops up people. Someone could hit send at the last second, and he gets his arm chopped off as he hits send. You know, have an awesome scene where Darth Vader's ripping people apart. But then you still have, you know, Leia being in another system. He's got to figure out where the transmission went. He's got to chase down Leia and, you know, and send it.
Go seamlessly from that movie into the
truth of the matter is that had to be their Chekhov's gun. Because that's the Chekhov's gun of Episode 4. So there's nothing you can do. That's the Chekhov's gun of episode... Not the Chekhov's gun. I'm sorry. That's the MacGuffin of episode 4.
I am so confused. Are you talking about?
That's the MacGuffin of episode 4 is that disc of the plans. But that's the MacGuffin of episode 4.
But they still didn't need to have it seamlessly transition from...
No, that. I'm not saying that David's point is invalid, because I actually kind of see where he's coming from. But what I was saying was I can see the point of doing why they did it was because they knew they had a MacGuffin in episode 4 with Leia reaching down and putting the little chip into R2. So we knew we had to have the physical chip.
Right.
But of course, even if you think about this, that's true, except what happens when you play the chip? You have
a little hologram.
You have a hologram of Leia. So it's a different chip.
She added something to the chip anyway.
Well, actually, yes. She recorded herself. Was probably on a totally different thing, and the chip was just not related to the recording. What I was going to say with Family Guy, they did parodies of 4, 5, and 6, and in it the escape pod goes, and they're like, "Should I blast it?" And the guy says, "No, let it go." And then the response was like, "We're saving laser blasts. Why? I can shoot it. It's right there. No, let it go. But I could shoot. No, let it go. Now I could see not blowing up everything." But putting a high priority on capturing everything, because if you blow it up, you don't know for sure that you got it. You want to capture it and make sure it's not there.
Well, it's too bad that thing didn't have TIE fighters or something on board to go out there and fetch it.
Oh, so they have a.
It should have had hundreds and hundreds of TIE fighters on the.
Racks time. It was sleep time.
They had bad blue milk.
Spoiled blue milk.
Hera's just passing that stuff around.
Ah,
I know.
That's not the only thing. Okay.
And that's how old sick bay getting that lecture, that video, which has a whole bunch of genitalia that you never want to see ever again.
Dr. Phlox is all about showing that stuff off, though. Dr. Phlox loves that stuff.
So, oh. I just remembered, and I love how this makes me remember this. This is all connected. I love how this reminds me of another complaint I have about Rogue One. Okay, it's because of Chewbacca and his girlfriend, who he's clearly avoiding. Because when they
Mon Mothma.
Mon Mothma, thank you. Mon Mothma says, "Where's my boyfriend?" And we left him back on the ship.
You're talking about from Episode 7.
You're
talking about Mon Mothma,
right?
You're talking about Mas Kanata.
You know, I've apparently not had enough coffee.
Mas Kanata.
This is what you get for us not being at a coffee shop.
Oh no.
You're talking about Mas Kanata in Episode 7.
Okay, so here's a complaint about Episode 7, which is not the topic. Chewbacca was back at the Falcon, and then eventually it gets to the point to where the bar is being attacked and destroyed, and somehow Chewbacca has teleported from the ship to there because they all come out of the ruins together.
Well,
do you remember that?
Yep. I'm waiting for the rest of the story.
They never show the scene of him leaving the ship to get to there.
Right.
So that was one of those, something ended up on the cutting room floor, which is probably a scene between Chewbacca
and Mas Kanata,
which leads me back to
they have the, but there is a scene that is on the cutting floor because they meet Rey's keeper, the portions guy, and Chewbacca rips off his arms in Mas Kanata's cantina. So Chewbacca has come back at some point. They just didn't show it in the film.
That's why there's a guy. I haven't seen that footage yet, or armage.
So you're saying Plunkett was at the cantina?
Yes.
Well, he'd have been tracking the Falcon. He wants it back. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. They cut out that whole scene. It's a.
Yeah, I want that scene back. That's an awesome scene.
So
yeah.
I guess I
finally seeing
Yeah, I was about to say you're not even complaining about Rogue One now. Yeah, you're complaining about Force Awakens.
So, anything.
And somehow chlamydia got you to this point.
Why is there?
Maybe does he think Mas Kanata looks like a giant chlamydia?
No, Mas syphilis. That's another character.
No, it's Darth syphilis.
Darth syphilis. Yes. To me, before going into Rogue One, I'd read this awesome theory that the Knights of Ren. There were seven of them, and there was like the seven main rogues in Rogue One. And there was this great theory that matched up all the different people to like Jen and the pilot. I can't remember all their names, but the Maze Balbus as the heavy. They matched them up to the Knights of Ren. I thought it would have been great to have them captured, to have them twisted, and have them become evil. You know, maybe frozen in carbonite for a couple of years, and then revived to be the Knights of Ren. I was really, really wanting this to be true. I just wanted anything to connect to Episode 7 and the new trilogy. And I was a little bit disappointed that this movie had nothing to do with it at all. No Snoke, no anything, no nothing, no connective tissue. And I was really sad about that.
I'd heard early on that it was going to be its own movie.
Right.
And I actually heard it in a way that made me even surprised that it connected to A New Hope.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was going to be just really out there and just be a total anthology-type Star Wars movie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I remember a lot of Star Wars fans, their fear was, oh, now that Disney has it, they're going to crank out a Star Wars movie once every month, and the quality's going to drop because they're just going to be trying to crank them out like a machine.
Right.
To get that money, which still could happen. I don't know. I haven't seen it yet. It doesn't feel like that's the way it's going.
It does feel like that to me already, because I wasn't super blown away by The Force Awakens. It was good, but it was rehashed of Episode 4. And this, to me, almost felt like it just didn't need to be made. I only saw it once, and I didn't want to see it again.
Did somebody kick you in the nuts before you went?
No.
Because, I mean, this would be the opposite of Troy. Troy was like, good popcorn, good company.
I was kicking people in the nuts.
The question was, did you have bad popcorn? Was it bad spoiled blue milk?
No.
And were you
it was expectations.
I went with Aaron. I went with Josiah from the Geekyverse. It was great going with some friends. We all went to the same theater. We sat next to each other because it was one of those seats where you have to pick the seats ahead of time. And I found out where they were sitting, and we got those same seats right next to each other. We went right over to the place and recorded. It just, like, I wanted to see it again before I saw it, but then after I saw it, I was like, it just.
How did the rest of your group take it?
The Josiah and Robbie from the Artful Gremlins, they loved it. They were like the big super on board. Me and Aaron were kind of the naysayers.
It's I've discovered this a long time ago. Expectations totally changes the outcome of a movie, and since I had no expectations, there was no bar for it really, other than Episode 1 through 3 and Force Awakens, which is definitely way higher than those. And I felt, since the bar was there, but I had no expectations, I thought it did as good, if not better, than Force Awakens. I'm trying to think of a movie I saw. Granted, I haven't met anybody that likes the new Star Trek con. What was that one called?
Into Darkness.
I went into that completely 100% sure it was going to be con, because they were so adamant that it wasn't con, that I already had a bad attitude, and I came out of it totally hating it. The first one, because I'm not a huge Star Trek fan, but I have a huge appreciation of Star Trek.
That's where I am with Star Wars.
There were things in it that I'm like, well, I don't know if that was a good change, but I'm okay with that change.
Yeah.
Because I went into it with a different attitude. It could be because you went in with this knowledge of the whole Knights of Ren, and you had you already had this great story that it could have been. It came nowhere near that, and maybe that's why it rubbed you the wrong way.
Sure, you know, there's definitely expectation management. I try to spoil movies as much as I can for myself so that I am not shut down. But there wasn't a whole lot out about Rogue One. They actually did a pretty good job of containing it, because I usually almost always spoil movies for myself. I spoiled Into Darkness for myself completely before I saw it, like scene by scene. And I didn't hate the movie when I went and saw it, because I knew exactly what I was getting and I was just along for the ride. And right. If I didn't spoil it, would I have hated it like everyone else did? Because right now, I'm a defender of Into Darkness, because I'm like, it's really not that bad, guys. It's not great. They lied, and they made a big deal about it. They shouldn't have. The movie made missteps, but it was still a fun movie. It was a good action movie.
I'm not getting into Darkness.
a few little things in a movie can ruin the whole movie.
Yeah.
Because if and this is not the case for Episode 1 through 3, the entire thing's just crap. But for Into Darkness...
You're here.
There are things that are like...
What if it had been Gary Mitchell?
I love that idea.
If it had been Gary Mitchell, I would have been fine.
Now, had it been Gary Mitchell and they still teleported him across that distance with a teleporter, which
that
made no
sense.
And then if he had superhuman strength and he kicked Spock's head and Spock's head didn't explode off of his neck, which is what should have happened when Khan kicked Spock's head. And basically that Khan should have been when he punched Kirk. Kirk should have exploded and died. They're just little things that they got weird with, and that for me in that movie.
I know Kirk and Khan had a fist fight in the original 66 episode, and Kirk didn't explode then.
No, but they didn't build that Khan as being as insanely strong as they built him for. Right.
They did. They said that in the original movie, they said he's like 5 times stronger than a regular human.
Blood everywhere. I mean, We showed that Khan was powerful enough to crush a skull.
And I don't remember the original TOS episode, what they had that Khan do to...
Well, no, I'm talking about in Into Darkness.
Well, I know, Into Darkness.
He crushed his head, and I was like, that's strong enough to crush a head.
He was backhanding Klingons left and right like they were nothing, yeah. So...
Well, I mean, Jonathan Franks can do that in Next Generation, so beating up a Klingon's not a high watermark.
But when he punched him,
Klingons.
But when Jonathan Frakes punched a Klingon, did he fly back 20 feet like a kung fu film?
Well, no. Jonathan Frakes usually used throws on the Klingons to get them on their back.
No.
Yeah, and to be fair, Dax did kind of beat up on Worf a lot, and yeah. Worf on her. So to be fair,
I mean Klingons aren't a really high watermark, unfortunately. I'm hoping Star Trek Discovery will fix that and show Klingons as actually terrifying like they should be.
Yeah.
So I think in a lot of people that I'm wondering, because for me, I got that same sort of feeling that I had the first time I saw A New Hope way back when I was 9 years old.
Yeah.
And so when I was watching Rogue One, it was different than anything I had seen it was different enough that it felt new to me.
Yeah.
And that's what A New Hope did for me when I was a kid. It was so different from everything else I had seen.
It was A New Hope.
And so it had captured that. And I'm wondering if whatever it was for people who dislike Rogue One, it didn't click that way with them. And they're still remembering how New Hope, Empire, and Jedi clicked with them. And that clicking didn't hit the same notes. And maybe that's why you get these people who just, unlike David, just absolutely hate Rogue One. Like they said, this never should have been made.
Yeah.
I don't hate it. I think it's a beautiful movie. I just didn't care about the characters, and the ending to me just kind of ruins the beginning of A New Hope. I loved CG Tarkin. I loved CG Leia.
There are apparently detractors who really didn't like it.
Yeah, you liked it enough that you didn't hate it, but I know there are people that just absolutely hate it, and they're Star Wars fans.
Star Wars fans.
And that makes me also wonder. I mean, because I put a lot more weight on your opinion of a Star Wars movie than I would on my opinion of a Star Wars movie, because I'm a Trekkie. I'm a hardcore, down to the core Trekkie. And, you know, so whenever you say, oh, that was a good movie, I'm like, oh, it must have been a pretty good movie, you know. And so it's kind of weird whenever I hear detractors in your own area. But then I keep thinking about all of us in the Kelvin timeline. And where we all fall as Trekkies on the Kelvin timeline, and I'm like, well, I guess that makes kind of sense.
I remember you telling me about that you've been on some boards and people just disown you.
Yeah, I was actually ejected from a board because I would not admit that I hated the Kelvin timeline.
Oh, yeah.
And I was not that bad. And they just, they kicked me from the board.
I've had something like that happen to me too. And it's like, oh, you're not a Star Trek fan. I run a Star Trek podcast. I put so much time into something that I don't have to. You cannot not call me a fan just because I liked the Kelvin Timeline movies.
Like, why are you here? I mean, are you even really a Trekkie? And I'm like, I've written 300 pages of a fan comic.
Exactly.
300 pages.
You're a walking Star Trek encyclopedia of knowledge.
You can't really say that David and I are not Trekkies.
Because I would even, with my extremely limited knowledge of being able to recall stuff, because I have a love for it, I consider myself a Trekkie.
Yeah.
In a way.
If you are. If you love Star Trek, you're a Trekkie.
Yeah. I mean, it really boils down to it. But you can't say that we're not when we've got, you know, a podcast that's been going on forever like David does, or a fan comic that I put out once a week for God knows how many years.
It's an interesting, weird hipster-like geek shaming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. It is kind of a – you know what? It is. It's geek shaming. It's really weird. Now that you say that. That seems to be the era. It seems to be the fashion these days.
Why did the hipster burn his tongue on the coffee?
Uh-oh.
Was it too hot?
It was cool.
We're talking about it. All right, well, so what about high points? I mean...
On that point, let's change the topic, says David.
as we mentioned, Alan Tudyk was definitely a high point.
Yeah. And, oh, yeah. K2SO. K2SO.
So
everyone,
we're all in the same boat. We all agree that K2SO was the high point of the movie.
Well, one of them anyway, certainly. I loved little things. I loved, like, when the rebels were attacking the shield.
I leaned over to Aaron. I was like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah. But they're like all of these, that noise. The noise of the X-Wings. In Force Awakens, it's slightly different. But I mean, in Rogue One, those were X-Wings. They sounded like X-Wings. They had that whine.
Which, and they had that pink light.
Yeah, I mean, little things like that. I love that.
It made me think of the video game X-Wing and TIE Fighter, because like how the light exhausts were pink. That weird pink color, it made me think about the games. I was like, ooh, I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, there were all kinds of just... And I mean, obviously, it's Lucasfilm and it's the Skywalker Ranch doing all the audio. I mean, these are all the people... If anybody knows Star Wars, these guys know Star Wars. I mean, this isn't like Star Trek, which got handed over to Bad Robot. This is Star Wars still in its home spot. Disney may own it, but it was still in THX Skywalker Ranch... sort of stuff. I mean, we were there at home, and I understand that, but still, I've noticed that's one of the things that, if there's any one thing that I love about the entire Star Wars saga, it's the storytelling through sound. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the things, it was, what was it? Episode 2 was the one where Jango Fett was in the asteroid field.
Yes.
And the noise that the explosions made were so cool. They just like made my chest reverberate, and it was this really neat, you can't even explain that noise.
Actually, Rick McCollum explained that noise.
I'm sure.
I watched it with the commentary in November when we talked about episode 2, and he was like, I wanted to make like a sound black hole where all the sound gets sucked into it for a second and then it gets released out. And I'm like, wait, Rick, you realize there is no sound in space at all, right? So there, all of space is technically a sound black hole.
That's the conceit that all of our science fiction has taken, so sure. I'm okay with
it. Firefly did it good. There was no sound in space in Firefly.
People were afraid to do that. I mean, even Star Trek won't do that. You know, we won't get silence out of Star Trek. That doesn't even make sense.
So I do have a high point I think I like more than Robot, which I'll call him that.
K2SO.
K2SO. And this is a really weird, I'm going to be in like an extremely small subgroup of people that loved this aspect of it. And that is, for years I've been a fan of kung fu movies.
Yeah.
And way back when you had to go find that little video store where they had the bootleg copies was the only way you could get a hold of the movies.
That's an anime.
Yeah, just like, and it's, so for years I've loved them. And so when they cast Donnie Yen as the blind wannabe Jedi, And
Chirrut,
and then his sidekick,
Maze Balbus.
Yes, thank you. But when I saw Donnie, he's just an amazing martial artist. He's been in a bunch of movies that I've seen. I'm like, that's so cool that he's in this. And I've noticed Netflix has like doubled or even tripled the number of Donnie Yen films they have on it. And so it means it's the same thing happened with Jackie Chan. When Jackie Chan made Rumble in the Bronx and got his first American film, all of a sudden everybody started to want to see all the Jackie Chan films. So,
and while we're on that character,
I want to see both of those characters in their own movie. So it would have to be another prequel of a prequel of a prequel.
Right. But while we're at it, that was another beautiful thing about Rogue One. He was Force sensitive, but he wasn't a Jedi.
Right.
Which showed that there were people who dealt with the Force, but not in the same way as Jedi do. And so that was really cool because it gave a depth to the Jedi. And it wasn't screwed up like midichlorians were. Because midichlorians was just dense and stupid.
Well, when you go back to Yoda, and Yoda says the Force is everywhere and everything in that rock, in that ship.
Right.
Midichlorians are biological. You wouldn't have those in an inanimate object.
Exactly. Like a rock.
A ship. Ship.
Actually, I heard a theory. And actually, it wasn't a theory. Somebody had actually asked George Lucas about midichlorians once. And his response was, maybe Qui-Gon was wrong. And that totally messed with my world because now Qui-Gon Jinn is some weirdo dude with like a water douser going around going, yep, you've got a Force. Yep, you've got the Force. And he's got some little device.
Yeah.
In the commentary, George Lucas said midichlorians were a thing all the way back in episode 4, but he just didn't have time to explain it.
This is why all those Padawans that get slaughtered sucked. Not that they were kids. They didn't have the Force. Qui-Gon Jinn had just, hey, he's got the Force. Sure he does.
He lied.
Crafty people.
Sent all those children to their deaths.
He's like, this one's got the Force.
Yep.
This one's got the Force. They all suck.
Version of phrenology. He felt their skulls to see if they had the Force.
There's another title for this one. The Force Phrenology.
Well,
oh, man.
The idea of Chirrut, I just really wish they gave him more to do. I felt he made the Force really culty just by saying the same line over and over again as 90% of his lines. I was like, well, Donnie Yen's a good actor. Give him something to do.
Yeah.
And though that is true, it fit the character, and I felt like that was really interesting. And I loved that everybody thought he was some kind of woohoo bizarre dude until that moment where he crosses the field saying, I believe in the Force effectively the whole time and nothing hits him, you know, and he's in crossfire. Although this harkens to another scene in episode 4 where C-3PO and R2-D2 do the same thing across a hallway full of crossfire. So you know what that means?
All the stormtroopers are lousy shots.
And it also means C-3PO is Force sensitive.
You know what happened? Little Anakin building C-3PO cut his hands while he was building C-3PO and bled all his midichlorians
all over him.
That makes sense. I like the theory I heard that episodes 1 through 3 is all just the story that R2-D2 tells about it, and that's why R2-D2 is such a badass in them and doesn't have any of the stuff anymore when you get to New Hope and that. He's like, I used my jets to fly out of that. Yeah, sure you did, R2. Where are they now? Oh, I was retrofitted. They're gone. and I shot oil on them and lit them on fire. Yeah, sure you did, R2. Yeah, yeah. Why aren't you doing that right now? I don't feel like it.
Yeah. I've read things about George Lucas who pretty much said that. Like, he's basically like the storyteller of the saga.
Get it off. Relax. I heard an interesting theory, and I'm going to be watching for this for more clues of this when I see Rogue One again, because I will see Rogue One again, is that Chewie.
Go to the Dollar Theater.
Yep. Chewie and
Baze Malbus.
It's Baze. I remembered it rhymes with Blaze. That's it. That they are actually lovers.
Yeah, I could see that.
I mean, yeah. I guess, but I mean, at the same time, they could just be bros, too. I mean,
right.
That's why it's really
bros.
I think it's really hard to tell.
Well, especially when you've seen couples of whatever combination, sometimes you can't really tell.
Yeah.
They just seem like bros.
Yeah. That's totally true with my wife. She's just a bro.
She's just a bro. Yeah. Well, what did you guys think about CG Tarkin and CG Leia? Because I loved them.
I'm on board with you there. I can see why some people thought it was disrespectful, but I disagree with it.
I disagree with the disrespect. I had a problem because the eyes didn't fit perfectly,
but
I have a degree in animation.
I was about to say, you need to mention your background.
Yeah, I've got a degree in animation, so I can really pick nits on CG. And so I know I am way over the line with that one, but the eyes were like, I'm like watching the eyes going, because my first thought, I didn't know, I was completely blind to this. I saw Tarkin, I'm like, damn, they got a great Peter Cushing. How did they do that? And then later on, I was like, his eyes don't match.
Oh.
And it was kind of like that, you know, oh, my. I just really suddenly was like, that's really well done, actually, because it fooled me for a while there. I was doing good. I'm being fooled. I was like, wow, I didn't even know. So I was pretty impressed.
And then I heard through before Carrie Fisher passed away, yep. She said that she loved it.
I thought I heard she broke down in tears. She thought it was so good.
Yeah.
She thought it was so wonderful and well done, which, hey, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, more power to you.
And they have confirmed that I've read that they are not planning on, now that she's passed away, they're not planning
CG-ing
on doing
General Leia.
Yeah, they're not going to do it anymore.
I'm really sad about that, actually, because I don't want them to kill her just in between movies. I think that would be – that's dead. A disservice to the character.
Oh.
I feel that they were going to kill her either in that her death was imminent in the movies.
It's a fantasy.
Right.
And so a lot of fantasies have a certain amount of pathos to them. And so I think I'm with you. By just the pattern of things, that she has to die in order for either Kylo Ren to fully come back from the dark side, or if there's something we don't know about Rey that's going to be involved in this.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a certain amount of the pathos that would have to be in there. So I agree with you. I think she was destined to die anyway.
I kind of sure. wish. Oh, I was going to say, story pacing for Force Awakens. I really wish they would have waited one more movie to kill off, spoiler alert, Han mm-hmm. Solo. Because I think right.
if you haven't seen Star Trek or Star Wars 7.
Yeah. I felt like it was too forced. Ha ha. But the pacing of it seemed like his death should have been one more movie away.
Right. But I still feel like I think that that was part of the pathos. I think they were ahead.
The actor, Harrison Ford, wanted them to write his death in Empire Strikes Back.
Yes.
Yes.
So to me, it's not a spoiler that he dies in Force Awakens, because if you know anything about Harrison Ford and his relationship with Star Wars, you knew he was going to be a goner in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they brought him in, it was totally a Leonard Nimoy. You know that's what happened. You know, Leonard Nimoy is doing the, I'm not coming back. This is so stupid. Hey, we'll have you die. Okay, I'll come back.
Okay.
And then he comes back and he's like, okay, that was a mistake. Dying off was a mistake, so they had to bring him back. But I know that I have a feeling, just the way Harrison Ford handles and deals with it, that I think you're right. I think that they were like, Harrison, we can't make this movie without you. Nope, not coming back. We'll let you die. Okay, I'll come back.
Mm-hmm.
Probably, but he's not going to be sad about it like Leonard Nimoy was. He's been wanting Han Solo to die forever.
But I think he's happy to be done with the franchise.
Mm-hmm. They were I forgot the actor that they've cast for young Harrison Ford, for young Han Solo.
What's his name?
It's not CG?
It's not CG.
Oh, darn it.
The actor looks like he could be a young Harrison Ford, and I cannot remember. The name is gone from my brain.
Baze Malbus.
Donald Glover has been cast as young Lando Calrissian, and if you're not familiar with who that is,
yep.
He plays Troy, which I'm connected to with my name, in the TV show Community, and he also has a show on called Atlanta, which is a serious but with some good comedy show about him trying to be a rap producer, and it's full of great dramatic and great comedy.
It's going to be fun to see that.
Yeah.
That's going to be a lot of fun.
And he's
going to have to lose the Millennium Falcon card game.
And Donald Glover's a true geek. Like, you know true geeks when they're in the profile. Like Simon Pegg is
Simon
a
Pegg.
True geek. And so,
and he's a true Trekkie, too, which is always a nice thing.
Hoot!
So.
Man, so I don't know if you guys keep up with Red Letter Media, but the Plinkett, he did a fantastic, very short, which is strange for Plinkett, a video on Rogue One. And the biggest point I really took away from that is that Rogue One was supposed to be a standalone Star Wars movie. And it's not. Because it relies entirely on understanding A New Hope and everything, because if you took the exact same movie and took out all the Star Wars references and placed them with generic sci-fi references, it would be an awful, awful, terrible movie, because it was like, well, what happens next? Like, right. it's just without the context of Star Wars, A New Hope, this movie doesn't stand on its own. And I was really hoping for the standalone movies to stand alone.
I don't think they're going to be able to. But there is no way.
Also, I've heard this complaint, and I pointed out, if you go watch Empire Strikes Back without watching A New Hope or Return of the Jedi, you're going to have the exact same problem.
But that's a trilogy. This is not – Empire Strikes Back wasn't pitched as a standalone movie. The in-between episode numbers are pitched as standalone movies.
Yeah, so what you're saying is, had they came out right in the beginning and said, look, this is – I know why they didn't do it now. They did not want to use the word prequel.
Well, and not only did they not want to use the word prequel, they didn't want to get the 12 Star Wars hardcore Star Wars fans to be the only people who bought tickets.
Mm-hmm.
So they wanted people to be able to – what it boils down to is people don't realize how much of our culture is influenced and permeated by Star Wars. And so what you have is you have a whole bunch of people – who are not Star Wars fans, but yeah, they know the whole story. And so it's not going to be a problem.
I still run into people over the age 20 who have not seen the Star Wars movies.
Yeah.
Or they've only seen episode 1 through 3.
Yeah, but it's still one of those things. It's like if you said this is only going to be – it's a prequel to episode 4 and you have to have seen episode 4 to see this movie, you would have lost a whole bunch of people – who would have been fine.
Mm-hmm.
They would have gone in there just fine and not had a single problem with any part of the story. But they think, well, I've only seen Star Wars 3 or 4 times. So I don't know if that's good enough to watch. You know what I mean? What's going to end up being, you'd scare off people.
But I feel like they should have done that, because people were confused about what the movie was.
Yeah.
For me, I was pleasantly surprised not knowing that I was going to do that, because when it got there, I was glad where it got, because I knew I was rewarded having seen A New Hope with that.
Right.
It's hard for me to say how I would have felt if I had not seen those movies.
Sure.
I would think it would inspire me to want to see the other ones, but
right. Well, and I actually kind of like the idea that people are talking about taking Rogue One and Episode 4 and mixing them together,
mm-hmm.
so that they're just one big long 3-hour movie. A 3.5-hour movie.
Like 4.5.
Yeah, it'd be huge. But I mean, I thought that'd be kind of fun, because it does sort of feel like one story mm-hmm. of all of Episode 4 and Rogue One. And that's not to say that 4 and Empire don't feel like they're connected. They are connected, but they aren't connected as literally as Rogue One and Episode 4 are, because, I mean, we literally see Leia's ship leave at the end of Rogue One
right.
and enter at the end of Rogue
One. Yeah, there's a gap between New Hope to Enterprise.
Enterprise? Yeah. Wow, that's interesting.
That's a really big gap. But I like movies that feel like role-playing games, and yep. A New Hope, all three of those felt like role-playing games, and you can look at the gap between as, okay, here's your experience points, go level up your character. Because when the characters come back, they have leveled up.
Right.
And you see that with each one, and that felt really cool. And Rogue One felt like a role-playing game with a total party kill at the end.
Right. but it's not only that. But it does feel like Rogue One is like, well, we've killed your characters, but you know what? We're gonna let the girl over there that's playing Princess Leia, you get to live. Everybody else.
Oh, no. Here's what it was.
Has to make new characters.
And the person who is playing Jen gets to make is playing Luke Skywalker because they're the most. And then of course you have Cassian is going to be Han Solo. That's why they feel like the same movie. The role players just made clones of their new characters.
Rolled up new characters. And they're same players. Not just
that,
new characters.
Not that Hollywood has ran out of ideas.
Yeah.
That's not the answer. Hey, they're remaking Death Race.
Yeah, I saw that.
I'm sorry, but I'm a bit
another
horrible.
One.
It's a true Roger Corman remake of the original Sylvester Stallone, David Carradine one. So that it's totally ignoring the other ones that came out, and so it's going to be gaudy costumes, over the top gore, tons of cleavage and ridiculousness. So it's a true Death Race remake
That sounds fun. I saw James Cameron is getting the rights to Terminator back, and he's trying to give the director of Deadpool the reins to do Terminator, and there's debate whether or not it's going to be the actual Terminator 3. They'll just retcon everything and just make it a true sequel to Terminator 2, since James Cameron did the first two, and then since he's associated with it, this will be the true third Terminator movie. That'll be interesting, if it's true.
It's back to Battle Angel, which still hasn't made it to the screens yet. I'm bitter about Battle Angel.
Now that we have Ghost in the Shell coming out, maybe Battle Angel.
Maybe we'll get Battle Angel.
Oh, so. Man. I hope we get a Vampire Hunter D.
Hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Vampire Hunter D is amazing. The first one.
Yeah.
My my wife's Pokemon Go name is Pokemon Hunter T. It referenced Vampire Hunter D.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but I saw her. She didn't tell me, and I saw her name. I was like, yeah, that's why I married you.
Awesomeness. So,
Rogue One, I think, is one of those, because I was thinking, I'm sure you've heard of the Machete Order, which is how you're supposed to watch
the
Star Wars films and include that. I was wondering how this was going to fit into it, because it's one of those that, unlike the way that episodes 1-3 kind of spoil who Vader is, and so you lose that impact when you hit episode five, this feels like it has to go before A New Hope.
It does, because it's literally like the day before New Hope, the movie. Exactly.
So it's Rogue One, so A New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, then 1-3, then 6, then 7.
I want to see the fella, the actor who was in that 70s show, whose name's escaping me. He made his edit of episodes 1-3.
Topher Grace.
Thank you, Topher Grace. And he's a big geek.
Major geek.
And he made his perfect version of the three compiled together with footage from other stuff. And apparently it was awesome. But he couldn't officially show it.
Right. And somewhere I heard that he let the EDL go, which I thought would be cool. That's the editor decision list. So you can, in other words, you can take his EDL, find his edits, and then duplicate his edits.
I didn't know that. I'm going to have to try to find that.
Yeah, that's what I've been hearing.
I would willingly sit through that as much as I would not willingly sit through episodes 1-3. I would like to see his version of that.
A fan's edit. That would be interesting.
Movies and make one movie, and it'd be fine in front of the, in as a flashback. Watch what I said.
There's 20 minutes of good footage in episode 1, and they all involve Darth Maul.
Yes, Darth Maul's great.
But I need to do what I did with Kill Bill 1 and 2. I need to sit down with Rogue One and A New Hope and watch them back to back, because I loved Kill Bill 1. Kill Bill 2 didn't quite click with me, and I'm like, why do I not like this? It doesn't make sense. I should totally like this. I watched them back to back, and it was a rhythm issue.
Oh, yeah.
So Kill Bill 2 is way better if you watch them back to back, in my opinion, with the deleted scenes added in that they took out. So I'm wondering if it's going to cinch it for me if I watch Rogue One and A New Hope back to back. I'm going to go, yep, Rogue One's my absolute favorite. But or I might go, yeah, this isn't as good as I thought it was, but it's still good. But
yeah,
Rogue One. I never thought someone could talk so much about Rogue One.
Like an hour on Rogue One.
Yeah, this is the second hour I've gone into Rogue One.
Well, you had to rehash. To be fair, you had to rehash because we weren't with you the first time.
Well, it's not rehash. I mean, I'm sort of saying the same things, but at the same time, I've had like a month to reflect on it. And, you know, I didn't like it at the beginning, but then I was like, yeah, I mean, it was great. In a way, it was beautiful. The acting was good. I mean, it was a fun movie. It looked beautiful. It was technically beautiful. Like, when I originally saw it, I was like, the technical aspect is a 9. The story aspect for me is like a 5. And I still feel the same way, but I've had more time to reflect on it. And someone, you know, did the shaky cam of this final scene with Darth Vader, and they put it on Facebook, YouTube, and I was like, it just made me angry again. I was like, no. They shouldn't have handed that off.
I kind of want to watch the New Hope through Jedi again, and then watch the sword fight with Vader, because one of the things I absolutely hate with the billions of things I hate about episode 1-3 is the sword fighting. It's just horrible, horrible, horrible. And it doesn't transition at all into the sword fighting for the other ones. Not in the least. And so I kind of want to go back, because as I was watching that scene with Vader at the end of Rogue One, I'm like, some of the stuff he's doing, he should have done in A New Hope and Jedi, and or especially Jedi when he's facing off in the end. He should have been doing this stuff. And I don't know if it's my memory is not quite accurate, so I want to go watch the two and see if I'm wrong about that. Because I remember him force throwing stuff at Luke and Empire.
Yeah. Like,
yeah, that's how you should use the force. If you've got the force, throw stuff at people.
Well, he pulled their guns away in that hallway. Why didn't the plans come with the guns? I mean, like, yeah. It's just that scene just falls apart in so many ways. There's no way that those plans should have made it off that thing. Like, it just makes, to me, it makes Darth Vader incompetent or lazy, or I don't know what he's doing. Like, you pulled all the guns out. Like, if you're aiming at their hands and pulling everything out of their hands, the plan should have been the first thing to come. It's the lightest object there.
Spoiled blue milk.
Damn, spoiled blue milk.
Darth Vader doesn't drink milk. He just...
He is milk.
Inside.
Blue milk comes from the sandy planet. He doesn't touch things from the sandy planet.
Okay.
That's why you didn't go to Scarif, because there was sand on it.
Which, if I'm going to hide your son from you, I'm totally going to hide him on the planet that you grew up on, because you'll never think to look there.
Right. Last place I'll ever look is my hometown.
Or family members.
Or any family members I might know.
Well, speaking of family members, how did Obi-Wan know? Obi-Wan never went to Tatooine and met Aunt Beru and Uncle Owen. And Padme was dead. She didn't tell him.
I
guess we'll find out in Rebels, because I guess in this season, we're getting old Obi-Wan back this season.
Hmm.
An older Obi-Wan's coming back to fight Darth Maul one more time on Tatooine.
I wonder if we could cut in half again.
Is this the mechanical version?
Yeah, it's the mechanical bottom half of.
Yeah, I didn't see the how they saved him, but I saw he was still alive in the animated show.
But yeah, I mean, in Rebels, they're bringing back Obi-Wan. And I've got to say, Rebels is like much more interesting than I thought it would be.
Rebels is good. I like Rebels a lot.
Well, it wasn't bad, but Rebels is like they're connecting tissue all over the place. We get to see Ahsoka and
the origin of the B-wing,
and we get Bobby Ewing and
I was hooked.
J.R. Ewing.
I don't remember what type of alien the alien guy is that's in their team, the blue one.
Yeah,
I forgot what kind of alien he is, but they're using the we're going to put handcuffs on you trick that they did with Chewbacca to get past the guards. And they go up to the guards, and the guy with them was like, yeah, we caught this Wookiee. And they look at him, and they're like, he's not a Wookiee. And he goes, rawr. Like
that was the prototype of the Wookiee. The whatever race that the blue guy is you're talking about, that was the that's what Chewbacca was originally going to be. And then they changed it. So that's like a callback.
A callback. That's why he's saying Wookiee. It's all one.
Well, it's funny because he's not a Wookiee.
He's not even remotely a Wookiee.
He was a proto Wookiee on the drawing boards.
Octo Wookiee
didn't have eight arms.
Yeah. I thought Rogue One was probably the, if not the best, one of the best of the lot.
I remembered what I was going to say.
Okay,
because I came up with another complaint, and this is the complaint of I would not take my 7-year-olds to see it because I don't think it's appropriate for 7-year-olds, especially with the amount of death. I kind of feel like with the way they die, I would expect a kid to cry when the robot gets it because he's so endearing.
The robot's definitely endearing.
And so it's a war movie set in the stars, which it feels like they're getting away from like A New Hope. And this is where it gets weird because they're supposed to be for kids, but I don't think they were really for kids. It's more of the marketing of the toys were for kids.
They wanted toys to be for kids.
And then the Ewoks came out.
Oh. Yeah.
So I think it's one of those that not as bad as Deadpool, but I mean for kids. I love Deadpool, but it's Rogue One's one of those that I think I would recommend as far as the subject of death is concerned. You do want to probably look at the PG-13 rating and take it seriously.
Yeah, we didn't.
No, you took your
girl, but I think he would have divorced us.
Well, like you were saying, he didn't grasp quite that they were.
Yeah,
dead.
He didn't quite grasp, but he's going to be much more traumatized by it in about 2 years.
Yeah.
This is what I watched. Holy crap! This is horrible. Why did I watch this? He's going to turn to me, Dad. Why did you take me to this? I know this is what's going to happen. This is how this is going to go down.
It's how it's going to play out.
I always feel unfulfilled because I can always complain about episodes 1 through 3.
Yep.
So that's why I think it's a well that'll
never dry.
Yeah.
So gotta keep forcing that back over there.
Well,
yeah.
Thank you guys so much for coming on. It was a lot of fun to get you guys as Geek Tank. And we've had Guy on a bunch. We always love having Guy. But it's great to have both of you on as Geek Tank.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. And I would love to come back again if you ever want us back as a team.
And especially now that we've confirmed that all these wires that look like spaghetti all over the place actually work.
Yeah, we'll definitely have you back, Troy. And if you have a favorite Star Trek episode you want to talk about, we can look that up.
Yeah. That'd be fun.
Well, it's I could tell you now if it's open up to all the Star Trek episodes, Beyond the Stars. Did I get the title
right? Yes, from DS9.
I'm a DS9 fan. And
me too.
Beyond the Stars, an amazing episode.
Yeah. We've not talked about Beyond the Stars yet. I'll have to say that for you.
Wow.
Well, fantastic.
I can't believe we haven't talked about Beyond the Stars.
We talk about all the things on Star Trek on this show, so it's like, I mean, we jump around a whole lot.
Yeah. Well, we do have 726 episodes to choose from.
And that's just counting the episodes and not the movies.
That's not even counting the movies, or Discovery, all of this stuff that's coming up, or the fanfics.
So where can we find you guys on social media?
Well, you can find me at GS Davis Art, and you can find both of us at RM Geek Tank. And we're also at RockyMountainGeekTank.com. And you can email us at questions@RockyMountainGeekTank.com.
You can also look us up on YouTube and Facebook. We've got some videos out there on YouTube. And you can friend us on Facebook to keep up with what we're doing. And just do a search for Rocky Mountain Geek Tank, and we should be the first ones that pop up.
Me personally, on Twitter, you can find me at David_J_Duncan. For Synthaholics, you can find us at Synthaholics.com, Facebook.com/group/Synthaholics for Facebook fun discussions and memes and silliness. And, we also have a YouTube channel, so all our podcasts are going up on there. It's just a still picture, but you get to listen to it on YouTube if you want to pass the time that way. All our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or Warp 11 on Twitter. If you like the show, check out our Patreon or patreon.com/synthaholics. If you like Guy's art and want to support the arts, you can check out his Patreon at patreon.com/gsdavisart. And follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, wherever you can find us. Give us stars and ratings. We'll read them on the air right for you. So thank you all so much for listening. Thank you again, Guy and Troy, for joining us. Live long and prosper. I'll puke in a sink and we'll cry till we laugh. And we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.